It's really easy to see the joy on the other side of eternity. And I think that's the temptation even that the disciples face is like, oh yeah, when you come back, that's what we're looking to. We're looking to eternity. But Jesus corrects them and says, when you see me, you will rejoice. And the question of when do we see Jesus? Is that something that's only in eternity, or is that something that we actually have access to today?
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in. Like always, do me a huge favor. Visit calvarybible.com, click your campus, find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. I really need you to get connected, stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. Also, we have the Church Center app. That's a really helpful way to figure out what is happening with the mobile bulletin, prayer requests, also to stay in touch with if you miss a sermon or you miss this wonderful podcast. Church Center is a great place to be as well. Today, we have none other than Brody Young. And actually, before we hit record, I called him a young man because he has no gray yet. But he's not really that young anymore.
That's not true, Jay. I turned 30 this year and like immediately started seeing a few grays popping out. It's like, what's going on here?
You know, I am bald because I was in youth ministry. You have kept your hair through youth ministry.
Yeah, I'm going for the Chris Barnes model where you look you're 21 the whole way through.
That's great, man. I hope it happens for you. When I was in youth ministry, I turned bald really quickly.
Oh man,
keeping up with all the students all the time is what a gift you are to our church.
Hey man, it's so fun to do it.
Good, man. How many years have you been at Calvary now? What year are you on?
I think this is year 5, because it would have been...
That's awesome.
I want to say it was fall 21 that I started at Calvary.
Yeah, man. That's so cool. So cool. Okay, so we're in the middle of March. What is happening in your world on the Thornton campus in March?
Yeah. So we're getting ready for, like everyone else, Easter is coming up and Easter egg hunt. And so that's really exciting. We have a unique thing going on here where we have every storyteller is filled up. That's like not been the need at all. People are so eager to share the gospel with kids at this Easter egg hunt. And then in student ministry, we've been going through the book of 1 John, talking about assurance of the faith and how we know Jesus. And it's been really cool to see that coincide with the gospel of John happening on Sunday mornings. And some of the connections there in students' lives. But it's just been a really unique season for us of we've had unbelieving students who have come to our youth group, and we've had genuine conversion that's been seeming to happen here at the Thornton campus over the past year. And there's seasons where you don't see as much of that. And we've just been in a really unique season where we're praising God for the work he's doing.
That's so cool, Brody. Man, what a gift. What a gift. All right. So you're in John on Sunday mornings as a local congregation, just like we are in Erie and in Boulder, and then 1 John in student ministry. I guess I got to ask the question because you're one of the few, like, what's the crossover between the Gospel of John and 1 John that you've noticed?
Yeah. So John, such similar elements of love and of connecting Jesus the Son to the Father. And you see some of that similar Trinitarian language in 1 John. Mm-hmm. And you also get similar themes about engaging with the world. So first half of John 16, where it's talking about engaging with the world. And then 1 John, you get, do not love the world or the things in the world. Mm-hmm. And so you get some of that similar language, and John trying to encourage believers in their faith.
Yeah, it's so cool. You know, I was just recently, as many of us know now, in the area that John pastored. And I think John and 1 John and the book of Revelation are more connected than I ever anticipated. And they're separate in our New Testament, but they're connected because of his sort of his pastoral life and voice in talking to everyday people about the implications of Jesus' resurrection. And I love that you're connecting those dots in student ministry with what we're doing on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. There are times when it genuinely feels like I'm like, which one am I in right now?
That is so cool, man. All right. So you preached John 16. What did you notice in preparation for this message on the Thornton campus? What were some themes that you just like, man, this is a theme that stuck out the whole time?
Yeah. Well, so the first thing that jumped out to me is just how weird of a passage it is, because you're in the farewell discourse, and usually in the farewell discourse, you just get Jesus speaking. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the second half of this chapter, and all of a sudden you have this conversation between him and the disciples. And so that stood out to me initially of, I think this is unique in the farewell discourse of chapters 14 through 17, mm-hmm. Of the dialogue back and forth that he's having with the disciples. And part of that is just the situation, which I'm sure we'll get into. And the theme that immediately jumped out to me from that is the joy that Jesus is trying to encourage them with, that they're going to receive in the midst of what they're going to go through.
Yeah. I think that's the major theme of your message too, you know, and we'll just jump into that sort of idea of joy. When you hear the word joy, you know, what comes to mind and how is that different from being happy? You know, I think in American culture, they're sort of synonymous in our language at times. How are they distinct when Jesus uses the word?
Yeah. So it's funny. The first thing that comes to mind when you said it, I think of Inside Out. The kids, I immediately think of the emotion and the character, you know, the blue hair. I also think of the image of an anchor. And this is probably, I've been reading, I just finished the book Endurance. I don't know if you've ever read Endurance, about the Ernest Shackleton voyage. Amazing book. If you've never read it, you got to read it. But it's this story of one of the hardest trials a group of 28 men ever go through. They're trying to cross Antarctica. And they end up spending a year basically jumping from iceberg to iceberg when they're shipwrecked, and surviving. And there are times when their night of sleep, they're literally like, they're anchored to an iceberg because now they're in a 15-foot boat in the middle of the ocean. Mm. And trying to sleep through the night, my wife must have gotten so annoyed as I was wrapping it up, because every night we'd go to bed and I'd be like, can you imagine if we were going to bed right now? Like, in sub-degree temperatures, water around us, like attached to an iceberg. As every night I went to bed, so grateful to be in a warm bed. But the anchor, in the midst of that, you know, it's such a necessary thing that fixed them to what was stable. Mm-hmm. And that's really what joy does. And I think how we see it unfold in this particular passage, especially. Happiness is the kind of thing that can come and go. And, you know, we're meant to respond to what's going on in our lives. That's part of the way we're wired. But joy is, I think, uniquely fixed to something that's eternal, and how that shapes the circumstances that we're in. I was actually talking with a friend this week who has been going through a really tough year and battles with health. And they said something that I thought was so profound. They were like, when you lose something that you love, it makes you realize what you can't lose, what can never be taken from you. And it was so profound just to know the context of what they're going through, that's coming from them. But to connect that with joy comes from a person who is Jesus, and no one can take that away. That's an eternal thing. You can take away my job, or my technology might not work sometimes, and the happiness will come and go, but you can't take away Christ and what he's accomplished.
Brody, that's so good, man. I mean, we could hit end on the podcast and that would be enough today. I think that's a really good word for us as we listen to you talk about it. Okay, so most of us walk through these seasons that something we feel like will never lift, right? When you think back on those seasons, what did they feel like at the time? And now for some distance, how do you see them differently? I think those are wrapped up in the word trials in the text, but like, how do we sort of get the landscape of what God has done and is doing and will do in our life when we think about John 16?
Yeah. You know, I tend to be, there's different ways you can respond in moments of trials. I tend to be more of the person who tries to push through and ignore the genuine circumstances that are happening around me and say, like, I can do this. I can do it. I'm going to push through. And it's so often in those moments, you don't realize what God's actually trying to get you to do is to stop and to pause and to recognize that what you're going through is actually too hard to try to navigate on your own. And so that's been my challenge, has been a lot of times even just acknowledging the circumstances and being like, Lord, I need your help in the midst of this. I mean, for me, I've been really fortunate in my adult life that I truthfully have not had that difficult of an adult life. So many of the challenges that I went through were when I was growing up and before I was a Christian. The hardest thing I've probably been through was navigating COVID when that first broke out. And I was working in the food industry, which was not a very good industry to be in. And I was working as a chef and I had just fractured my dominant elbow right before COVID. And so I'm in this line of work and it felt so unstable and isolated. And like many, I was lonely. And that's probably the one most notable moment in my adult life that I can remember, like, God, where are you in this? It's hard to see you working and I feel distant from you in this. Mm-hmm. And then you look back and sometimes you see the ways that he was working that were so hard to see in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's this passage is like so honest with us. And, you know, I think sometimes the scriptures are giving us, maybe that it's just not the season that we find our own selves in that Jesus is talking about something. We're like, that's good. I'll deposit that. But in this, you're like, man, I know what he's talking about. And everyone who comes to the text sort of has an understanding of what Jesus is talking about a lot of ways. What do you make of this sort of metaphor he used in verse 21? It says, when a woman is giving birth, she has sorrow because her hour has come. But when she has delivered the baby, she no longer remembers the anguish for the joy that a human being has been born into the world. I mean, this is a very distinct metaphor Jesus uses. What do we make of that?
Yeah, you know, it's really easy when you first read that to get caught up on that word remember. Like, you no longer remember the anguish, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that quickly jumped out to me about this metaphor that he uses is it's actually an instance with objective pain, right? Like, there is real suffering and real sorrow that comes in childbearing. And I shared in the sermon about a woman I know that just went through 48 hours of labor. Like, that sounds wildly intense. I can't even imagine. And yet, getting to the other side and how many women that are like, I would do it again. I want another kid. Yeah. And I'm ready a couple of years later. And my mom is a testimony of that, who she had 8 kids and she went through the process and did it again and did it again. And yeah, that's what a cool testimony of the other side of it, right?
Eight kids?
Eight kids.
Wow, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That is nuts. Yeah. Yeah, you got some firsthand experience even with your mom and seeing those. That's interesting. So where are you in the eighth? Where are you in the birth order?
Yeah, so I'm 6 of 8, but that's not even the crazy part. The crazy part is that I'm the only boy of the 8. So 7 sisters.
Man,
I feel like Harry Potter when I like go back to the town I grew up in. They're like, "You're the boy who lived."
That's great, man. Oh, that's so good. That's funny. You use the example of St. Patrick's example. What stands out to you with St. Patrick's story of finding prayer and faith during enslavement? Talk a little bit about that for those who weren't on your campus. I think it's a great story for us to hear.
Yeah. So, I mean, that story, it really is a cool one. And it has stand out to me because it was St. Patrick's Day. And even the way St. Patrick's Day gets celebrated by many people who have no idea who St. Patrick is, right?
Yeah.
But the story of him being kidnapped when he was 16 years old and being brought to Ireland, and he's forced into slavery as a shepherd. And the quotes that you read from his confessions and his journals are really so remarkable because of, one, the age that he was, and two, it's like, who introduced him to faith? Like, it's genuinely hard to know, other than he was in circumstances that were incredibly hard. And so you read the quotes about in rain and snow, whatever the circumstances were, like I felt an inner gladness that I now know, as he's writing this, was the spirit within me who helped me to endure that. And living months at a time in isolation, facing the elements and starvation, it was his faith through prayer that brought him through that circumstance. And then him wanting to go on and share that. I think it's such a cool story that it makes me sad that we don't do a better job celebrating it.
Yeah. I mean, when you really get to these sort of like St. Patrick's and even like Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, they're real human beings with real faith and living in some really amazing ways that we don't celebrate anymore.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah. And, you know, one of the things about St. Patrick was he was anchored in prayer. One of the things that Jesus says here, he talks a lot about that. Let's talk about prayer and how we pray in the midst of trials, how we pray in the midst of our daily life and how that can shape us.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the, if I can go back even before that, one of the strange parts about this text is the confusion that the disciples have, because they're like, "Well, Jesus, what are you talking about? You're saying a little while you're not going to see us, and is this because you're going to the Father?" And it's understandable that they would be confused, because Jesus has said both things. He said, "I am going to die, be resurrected," and he's also said in John 14 multiple times, "I'm going to the Father." And so the disciples are confused, but I think it's important that Jesus is actually correcting them here, because it's really easy to see the joy on the other side of eternity. And I think that's the temptation even that the disciples face, is like, "Oh yeah, when you come back, that's what we're looking to. We're looking to eternity." But Jesus corrects them and says, "When you see me, you will rejoice." And the question of, when do we see Jesus? Is that something that's only in eternity, or is that something that we actually have access to today? And so that struck me as like, man, we really need to get this understanding what this little while is correctly, that we don't just think, I suffer, and I'm going to get there one day, but also to say I can have joy today through prayer and through going to God and experiencing it in his presence. And I think we get a glimpse of that even in when it says the Father loves us. Like, he wants nothing more than for us to come to him in our struggles and in our trials and to say, Lord, help me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really good. Let's talk more about that. When we talk about the Father's love, what does that encapsulate within Jesus's idea here with the disciples?
Yeah, he's not going to leave them alone. I think that's a big part of it. And it even mentions that the wording, he'll be scattered each to his own home, right? And there's, why does he include that detail to his own home? Because there's loneliness, right? There's isolation. And he even connects that to, I will not be alone, though I'm abandoned, but the Father will be with me. And so there's that presence of, in the same way, you're going to be scattered. You're going to feel alone. And yet the Father who loves you will be with you. He'll see the challenges that you're in, and he won't leave you alone in them. And I think, it's not a coincidence that it's placed in the context of what Jesus has been talking about abide in me. He's like, hey, it's like, stay with me, remain in me. And it's really easy to spiritualize. Like, what does that mean? But for them, like, who physically have been with Jesus, right? What does that mean? I think one way we see it is like, pray, trust in the Spirit who's going to come. And I think that's what he's trying to help them to see, is the circumstances you're about to face literally in a few hours are going to be too big for what you can handle on your own. And you better be prepared to go to the Father if you're going to make it through this.
Yeah, that's so good, bro. I mean, there's so many applications to even just our regular world. I think we've talked about them, but like, it really does help us know that the community that we love and live with, the Jesus community, experiences these things together. And yes, you do feel alone and isolated and at times, but you also know that there's, I guess, brothers and sisters, even the disciples themselves felt these things and had to live through them and trust that the Father was there. He loved them. And that prayer was really the anchor, going back to sort of that early story of our faith and how we live through trials. So I know that I love sort of the end of chapter 16. He says, behold, the hour is coming. When he says, behold, in John, you really should pay attention. That's a big word for him. Your own home, leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father's with me. And he says, I have said these things to you that in me, you may have peace. I mean, that's a promise that, like, is that a real thing? Is actually peace achievable in these circumstances?
Yeah, it's interesting that he's connecting peace with joy. And those are both things that, if you think about peace exists just by its nature because we need it, right? Like it exists because there's things that we will be tempted to feel a lack of peace, because evil will exist around us. Pain will exist around us. And so it's God's gift to say, hey, you can experience this as you experience my presence, my character, as you take what you're going through and you put it against sort of that backdrop of, where does this fit into eternity and what I'm trying to accomplish? And that's where I think that peace is found, right? And we do it so imperfectly. But that's where we find it, is in putting it against eternity and saying, Lord, what are you trying to accomplish here in the midst of this?
Yeah, and I think the words he says, in the world you will have tribulation, I think this is what you're even getting at, is, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. Like, that's a declaration that we can bank on. That he has overcome the world. We see it in the writings of John in Revelation, like the end, what that looks like, how he overcomes the world. but for the day that Jesus is saying farewell to his disciples in some ways before the crucifixion, it's a real, real important statement. How do you think our view of Jesus overcoming the world shapes our today? How would Brody sort of connect these dots to it's Wednesday, March 25th, 2026? Like, how do we live in this?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about the connections to 1 John. Here it talks about Jesus has overcome the world and that, you know, he's defeated Satan, sin, and the last enemy to be defeated is death, right? And then in 1 John, we actually see that connection made to believers, where it says, you have overcome. And so John later on is going to make this connection of not only has Jesus overcome in that he defeated these things, but you yourself are going to live out that reality in your own life. And to live that reality out is to live like everything has been changed, because it has, right? There wasn't just one moment, but it was actually an eternal act that was happening. That's the difference between the resurrection of Jesus compared to like every other resurrection that we see, right? It's like you see Lazarus, you see Jairus' daughter, and Jesus. It's not just a moment of this person is alive again, which is miraculous, but it is so much bigger in what he's accomplishing, right? I think there's a balance here that there's a way to pretend like your sorrow doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. There's a way to be just dismissive of it. But there's also a way to live as though Jesus hasn't overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And again, another friend I was speaking with who is also going through a trial right now, I was asking him about it, and he was like, yeah, like we're sad. Me and my wife are sad, but we're grieving like Christians. And I thought that was just such a simple but profound statement. It's like, we will not live in the midst of this sorrow as though we don't know how it ends. That's going to shape how we navigate and lament in this moment. And I thought that was a really helpful way of thinking about that.
Yeah, Brody, I mean, that's such an encouraging word to hear, sort of how this text is living out within your friends and in your community. I'm just so thankful for your encouraging word on Sunday and your encouraging word to us today. You know, I think we know how to pray, but how do we pray for you and Thornton as we end the podcast and move into the Easter season?
Yeah, man. Pray for all the people that are going to enter through these doors and, Lord willing, may hear the gospel for the very first time, or maybe have heard it before and have not believed in it, that the gospel would be clearly laid out in a way that people understand it and are changed and take hold of it. That's what we're praying for, is real conversion and people coming to Christ. And you can pray that same thing for, you know, our student ministry, as we've seen some of these unbelieving students who are coming and wanting to be part of what's happening, that they would take hold of that as well. And for some who are new in their faith and they're just learning, what does this look like for my life? That it would do a radical transforming work. That's what I'm praying for, is Lord, change these lives.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Brody, so good to be with you. So thankful for you. Thankful for what God's doing through you and Thornton and the world around you. Yeah. And people that are listening to Weekly, let's pause even this week and pray for Thornton, pray for Erie and Boulder in the same manner. You know, if you don't know this already, Calvary is a church of prayer. We are praying constantly. And so you joining us on the work that God's doing in the world and in our neighborhoods is super important. And thankful for that reminder, even as we approach Easter. And thanks so much for listening to the Weekly. We're so glad you're tuned in to what we're doing here at Calvary and what God's doing. And you continue to go to calvarybible.com. Make sure you're just up to date of what's happening at Easter. There's so many great things happening in just a few days ahead. We need you to be paying attention. to what's going on so that you can participate, serve, pray for this community of Calvary. And again, we leave you with this, that Jesus said to his disciples the night that he was betrayed, he says, "In this world you will have tribulation, but take heart. I have overcome the world." We love you, Calvary. Stay faithful, and we will talk to you very soon.